Hello, on this episode of Highcast, we have here with us our panel. Let's start over here with...
Hi, my name is Todd. I'm from Trinidad and Tobago.
My name is Bianca. I'm from Jersey.
My name is Michael. I'm from Massachusetts.
Hi, on this episode of Highcast, we have here with us...
Hi, my name is Raj from Dawoodi, Trinidad.
Hi, my name is Bianca from Jersey.
Hi, my name is Michael from Massachusetts.
So here, our panel will be speaking on race and racism. The purpose of this course, we have to define race in terms of biology, it is their genetic traits that is passed down from your ancestors, passed down from your parents. So I'd like to open this discussion further to our panel. What is your perception of race? Let's start with our guest from Trinidad.
Hi everyone, my name is Raj, one more time. But I feel like in order to define race, you really have to go into the concept of race versus ethnicity, because I feel like people use them hand in hand. When speaking of race, I think we most have to take into consideration like physical attributes, like their genetic makeup, in order to kind of determine their race. And I feel like a lot of people mix that up with ethnicity, because they assume that because you're from a certain place, you have these physical features, when that's not necessarily like true to group everybody with that, with those physical features into a certain ethnicity. But ethnicity also has to do with like cultural background, like where you're from. So like if you're from Spain, if you're from France, and race would mostly be like black, white, brown.
So just to add on that, from my perspective, race and genetics is relevant to the controversy concerning race classism. In everyday life, many societies classify population into groups based on their traits and their ancestral backgrounds. Bianca, would you identify some of these racial classism you've seen in society?
I've definitely seen a lot of stereotypes, you know, directed at certain multicultural groups, and I definitely believe that looking at racism is important through an environmental lens as well, and understanding the context of society. And honestly, like the cultural identity that, you know, racism, I think, you know, forces on certain groups, just, you know, establishes certain stereotypes that people like to enact, and, you know, just certain ways in which, you know, they fall in line in a policy. And that's what we see today, like, you know, so many plights on black women, black men, even our Latino and Latina brothers and sisters are, you know, experiencing the hardships of racism amongst, you know, many other racial groups. But honestly, like, the idea of race is just very complex.
So Michael, would you like to elaborate more? Because Bianca spoke on some stereotypes. Would you like to elaborate some of these stereotypes you've seen against different racial groups?
Yeah, I'd love to elaborate on that. So, personally, for myself, I've seen a lot of prejudice, especially in terms of just like existing, and typically it happens in stores where people will just have these negative experiences. Like they'll just be trying to shop or like explore their store, and then end up in some kind of altercation that definitely wouldn't have occurred if their skin was not black. Like,
and there's definitely, like, you know, the stereotypes of, you know, oh, black men are prone to having big lips, you know, big nose, you know, even just the physical attributes that are associated with black women is just, you know, Hattie Mays, you know, they associate, you know, very big buttocks, you know, and it's just this overall, you know, physical attributes that, you know, are associated with, you know, the idea of race, and then are contextualized. It's just, you know, it's hard to understand, you know, how you can really classify, you know, what a race is, because there's so many different definitions of race, and it's, you know, it's just hard.
Just to like piggyback off of what you said, like, I think that's like why I spoke about race and ethnicity, because mm-hmm. it's like, you have people from Ethiopia who are dark-skinned. You have people from, like, America who are dark-skinned. You have people from the Caribbean who are dark-skinned. And you're grouping all these people as black. They all may look different, but just because of their skin color, they're going to be judged. And it's going to be, like, basically a pre-thought on the type of person that they are.
Right.
They are just, like, they're beings. And feel like society is really like, you know, judging us by our colors, like in front of us, for real.
Before even knowing the cultural, I guess, background or even our identity.
But I'd like to just to add for a point of view, since like ethnicity was brought into perspective, that that also we should also look at race versus colorism, because that's two different perspectives. So I'd like to just say point out that colorism
I can't connect to the public Wi-Fi. You may need to update your connection. Take a look at the help section in your Alexa app.
Colorism is more so associated with black people segregating themselves into different groups. Lighter skin complexions, darker skin complexions. That's colorism in different countries, in different ways and forms. So, like, Michael, just start off the discussion on how you've seen colorism in America.
In America, per se? So, especially at, like, unfortunately, it's the school we go to, sometimes you'll see people treat others differently because of the color of their skin. Like, they'll all be black, it's just some will be lighter than others, and they'll actually treat darker skinned people differently or vice versa. Like, and it ends up like being a schism in actually how these people operate in the world, and it's like that's not how that should be. We're all black.
Yeah.
So like I just like to add into that perspective coming from Jamaica. In my country, I've definitely seen colorism as people of lighter skin complexion get more opportunities than people of darker skin complexion, and people who are darker normally bleach their skin to look more of people lighter because that's more perceived as beautiful in many cultures because of how Europeans have thwarted the mentalities of black people over the years throughout slavery. And I've really bring that the closer they are to become white, the more they are to being better and good in society. This could even be perceived down into the doll studies where the kids...
Yeah, the tests.
The tests where the children were given the different dolls were good and bad. So, Bianca, you seem to know some of the doll study. What could you tell me of your reaction to this doll study and how you felt towards it?
I mean, it was just really hard to see, like, very young, innocent children opt to choose, you know, a white doll as opposed to a black doll, or even just associating positive attributes with white images. And it feels like just because the color of their skin is just so much of an impact on their own life, that they're only made to subject that same colorism onto something else and then internalize those experiences. And it's just so hard to see that at like a young age. And the idea of colorism is all around us, like literally the same thing that you talk about, it happens here. You know, I've seen Beyonce go from one shade to the next and a drastic amount of time, and it's just the media perpetuates a certain type of image. And even me having my own experiences, it's just there's this infatuation with light-skinned people and this object of, you know, if you're brown you're down, you know, if you're light, you know, you're all right, you know, if you're yellow you can mellow, but if you're black, you know, you got to go back. And it's just like that's been generational, and it's just disgusting to see that, you know, that's just being instilled in such, you know, young children, and even, you know, it's still existing today when it literally was just, like you said, started in slavery hundreds of years ago.
But I mean, can I just like say, like, this whole light skin, dark skin trend, like, thing that's been going on? Like, if you also realize, like, media has a lot of control as what's considered the black beauty standard, because right now, like, despite everything that you did just say, I feel like darker skinned women are more desired right now than lighter skinned women.
Mm.
Like, especially in the media. Like, teen dark skin, like, literally, I feel like on social media, you're gonna see, like, dark-skinned women are the ones who are being praised. Obviously, the light-skinned women are, but I feel like media is always going to control, like, that shift. Because, like,
yeah.
Even when you saw the cast of Grown-ish, for example, on, like, everyone was commenting on it, like, where's the diversity? Like, there's no dark-skinned people. And to me, that really didn't, like, it made sense, but it was, when you looked at the picture, it was a good variety of hues of, you know, black people in general. So I feel like that also comes into play, like, black people also choose to segregate themselves and, like, subdivide themselves into categories. Because I feel like if you see a black actor on TV, you should be happy to support instead of having to just, like, criticize because, you know, they're not as dark or not as light, you know?
See, I definitely agree with that, and I feel as though I support, you know, black people, period. And there is, you know, a certain commonality in seeing, you know, someone black in fame. I just think just the object of understanding what, you know, mainstream media, and by mainstream I mean white America, because it's like, for real, we're not the people buying these people's, you know, CDs. We're not the ones purchasing $1,000 tickets to go see Beyonce's tour. So it's kind of just like the object of colorism is just, you know, it's just interesting just to see that perspective.
Yeah, I feel like colorism definitely is not something that you can accurately put into, like, a box in terms of how it feels, because racism is already an institution. So being set in a system that's already institutionalized, you would think that people would be trying to help each other out of the system, and instead, like, they're putting up more roadblocks with colorism. So, like, you have more people, it's so counterproductive.
So I'd just like to introduce for all you guys here that we have here on the panel, the concept of, like, black psychology and what the discipline was introduced for in terms of reading racism. So black psychology is an African lens view of psychological phenomena. So this goes towards the father of psychology who decided to go against mainstream psychology and decided that it was important for black people to have a separate space to create and develop and think and develop methods for helping themselves versus the white man telling the black person, hey, this is what we're treating you with, like ADHD misdiagnosis. So it was important for black people to create a space for themselves to do this. This became black psychology. So what do you guys feel, in other ways, black people should create spaces for themselves in terms of racism, to go against, counteract racism?
Well, I definitely think that this attributes itself to my African American literature class. And I think black people have definitely looked at other methods that maybe aren't as highlighted to contrast, you know, these aspects of racism. It's like when you look at, you know, slavery, you know, you're getting whipped every day, but yet, you know, these ideas of, you know, domestication, like you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're writing, you know, you're learning how to read. These were your aspects and these were your methods of survival. So it's like, in turn, I feel like these are the pockets that, you know, black people have used to really combat and, you know, express themselves, especially in this time where the object of racism is so heavy on everyone's heart. If you look at rap music, you know, people are talking about getting gunned down, listening to, you know, spoken word. It's like you see, you know, expression, and I think that expression and creativity needs to continue to feed itself into the black community, because otherwise, you know, the object of racism is always going to be around us, and it's only going to, you know, eat at us more than we eat it ourselves.
So, but black people are overall oppressed in our society.
Right.
So, how do you see, as a woman, how are you coupled with sexism and racism in our society?
I mean, I think it's hard. Like, honestly, black women are at the bottom of the totem pole. We're, like, the most desired, but we're the least favored. And it's just, like, at some point you have to realize that there are many odds against you, and even more odds when you add in more factors like being LGBTQA or, you know, coming from a difficult background or being international. It's like there are so many different factors, but like being a woman especially runs itself hard against the male counterpart, but you know, finding pockets of, you know, of your womanism and, you know, making sure to objectify yourself, you know, as a woman, you know what I mean? And I feel like this idea of feminism, I don't really support that because it's very white idealist and it's very contrasting of men, when I feel like womanism is in support of women and especially women of color. So it's so, like,
so this is where you see, so just to go back, you said feminism is more white inclusionism. It's more like a Eurocentric perspective.
Yeah.
So you'd say this is where we get something more Afrocentric build.
Most definitely.
For like Afro women.
Yeah, it was definitely founded for Black women, and you know, being so we understand the African diaspora, so many different women are entitled as Black, but you know, just the object of womanism and, you know, the movement has become so popularized, you know, there are more women like our Latino sisters and even, you know, Asian Americans that are contributing, but it is for women of color, but specifically for Black women, I believe, and that's how I conceptualize it.
So, yes, so I just want a male perspective. So, Michael from Massachusetts, would you just like to expound on that for us? In terms of how you feel in terms of racism coupled with sexism in society.
Racism coupled with sexism. Okay. I feel like racism is definitely its own. They're both bad.
So Raj from Trinidad, how do you feel about racism? And Raj from Trinidad, how do you feel about racism and sexism?
I feel like there are a lot of stereotypes that pertain to Black male. That are just very specific to Black men. For example, like, a lot of when people say, for example, oh, your children's father is Black, like, no one, he's never around, like, the expectations that the Black family that is going to be a single-parent family, it's expectations that the Black man either supposed to carry his children or never be there. There's no in between. There's a perception that you can't trust Black men. And I feel like that goes hand in hand with racism and sexism.
Yes. That's good. Yes, so I just like to further expound to like how Black men were treated back historically, how they were used as workers and slaves and tools to super slaves for the white man, and beaten constantly, and most Black men were dehumanized in many ways, especially like from my perspective back home in Jamaica. Black men were beaten to the point they were castrated on many occasions, and their women were raped. So these psychological issues that were developed and mental issues developed due to a year lineage that caused racism due to white oppressive forces. So I just like to conclude if a few remarks from what a few last few questions, and each people gonna be given a question just to answer each. So Raj from Trinidad, I'd like to ask my question: what do you determine as your Blackness?
What do I determine as my Blackness?
Yes.
So when I think of my blackness, I feel like it goes hand in hand with my culture, my skin, and my experiences. So when I say my culture, I mean that my mom is mixed, but she's half black, and my dad is half black. If we're talking from a, you know, ethnic standpoint, I would consider myself Afro-Caribbean or black, right? When it comes to my experiences, I feel like if I've lived a black upbringing, like while growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, growing up in a household where both of my parents were half black, I would say that a lot of their, you know, cultural values and, you know, practices and experiences were passed on to me. So, yeah, I would say, like, that would be my blackness.
Yes, so my call from Michael from Massachusetts, how has your blackness affected you when you were, how has your blackness affected in terms of racism when you were in Spain? Being a black man in Spain.
Okay, well, I, when I was there, it was, I kind of didn't have the experience that everyone expected me to. I did not personally experience racism. In fact, it was almost as if they idolized black skin, at least in the center of Spain. Like, it was different. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced. People would go out of their way to help me do things. People would talk to me on the street, like, actually genuinely have a conversation with me. And then they would also, like,
embrace your blackness.
Yeah, they embraced it.
So, Bianca, how have you felt your blackness has been oppressed?
I feel like my blackness is being stolen by white snow bunnies. And I think, you know, that oppression also comes from not being able to exonify my own blackness. Like, the whole battle about, you know, Taylor Swift versus Nicki Minaj twerking. It's like Taylor Swift, you know, she gets a Grammy in her video, but Nicki Minaj can't get nominated, and she actually gets shamed for the voluptuous curves that she has as, you know, a black woman. So I think, you know, the constant strive that people have to be black, but nobody wants to actually endure the essence of being black, especially on top of that being a woman, that's the oppression that, you know, I endure.
So just to conclude for our viewers, I just say, everyone, thank you for listening. And for a final statement, to take into consideration the different factors that affects one's racial identities, such as your experiences, your background, your culture, where you're from, your lineage, and everything. Have a good night, and hi, Cass. Yeah. High five, guys. High five. High five, everybody. High five. Hi, on this episode of Hi Cast, we have here with us...
Hi, my name is Raj from Dawoodie, Trinidad.
Hi, my name is Bianca from Jersey.
Hi, my name is Michael from Massachusetts.
So here, our panel will be speaking on race and racism. The purpose of this course, we have to define race in terms of biology, perspective, it is their genetic traits that is passed down from your ancestors, passed down from your parents. So I'd like to open this discussion further to our panel. What is your perception of race? Let's start with our guest from Trinidad.
Hi everyone, my name is Raj, one more time. But I feel like in order to define race, you really have to go into the concept of race versus ethnicity, because I feel like people use them hand in hand. When speaking of race, I think we most often take into consideration like physical attributes, like their genetic makeup, in order to kind of determine their race. And I feel like a lot of people mix that up with ethnicity because they assume that because you're from a certain place, you have these physical features, when that's not necessarily, like, true to group everybody with that, with those physical features into a certain ethnicity. But ethnicity also has to do with, like, cultural background, like, where you're from. So, like, if you're from Spain, if you're from France. And race would mostly be, like, black, white, brown.
So just to add on that, from my perspective, race and genetics is relevant to the controversy concerning race classism. In everyday life, many societies classify population into groups based on their traits and their ancestral backgrounds. Bianca, would you identify some of these racial classism you've seen in society?
I've definitely seen a lot of stereotypes, you know, directed at certain multicultural groups, and I definitely believe that looking at racism is important through an environmental lens as well, and understanding the context of society. And honestly, like, the cultural identity that, you know, racism, I think, you know, forces on certain groups just, you know, establishes certain stereotypes that people like to enact, and, you know, just certain ways in which, you know, they fall in line in a policy. And that's what we see today, like, you know, so many plights on black women, black men, even our Latino and Latina brothers and sisters are, you know, experiencing the hardships of racism amongst, you know, many other racial groups. But honestly, like, the idea of race is just very complex.
So Michael, would you like to elaborate more? Because Bianca spoke on some stereotypes. Would you like to elaborate some of these stereotypes you've seen against different racial groups?
Yeah, I'd love to elaborate on it. So, personally, for myself, I've seen a lot of prejudice, especially in terms of just, like, existing, and typically it happens in stores, where people just have these negative experiences. Like, they'll just be trying to shop or, like, explore their store, and then end up in some kind of altercation that definitely wouldn't have occurred if their skin was not black. Like,
and there's definitely, like, you know, the stereotypes of, you know, oh, black men are prone to having big lips, you know, big nose, you know, even just the physical attributes that are associated with black women is just, you know, Hattie Mays, you know, they associate, you know, very big buttocks, you know, and it's just this overall, you know, physical attributes that, you know, are associated with, you know, the idea of race, and then are contextualized. It's just, you know, it's hard to understand, you know, how you can really classify, you know, what a race is, because there's so many different definitions of race, and it's, you know, it's just hard.
Just to, like, piggyback off of what you said, like, I think that's like why I spoke about, like, race and ethnicity, because mm-hmm. it's like, you have people from Ethiopia who are dark-skinned, you have people from, like, America who are dark-skinned, you have people from the Caribbean who are dark-skinned, and you're grouping all these people as black. They all may look different, but just because of their skin color, they're going to be judged, and it's going to be, like, basically a pre-thought on the type of person that they are.
Right.
They are just, like, their beings in general.
Yeah.
And I feel like society is really, like, you know, judging us by our colors, like, in flip books.
Before even knowing the cultural, I guess, background, or even our identity.
But I'd like to just add, for a point of view, since, like, ethnicity was brought into perspective, that also we should also look at race versus colorism, because that's two different perspectives. So I'd like to just say, point out that colorism
I can't connect to the public Wi-Fi. You may need to update your connection. Take a look at the help section in your Alexa app.
Colorism is more so associated with black people segregating themselves into different groups. Lighter skin complexions, darker skin complexions. That's colorism in different countries, in different ways and forms. So, like, Michael, just start off the discussion on how you've seen colorism in America.
In America, per se? So, especially at, like, unfortunately, it's the school we go to. Sometimes you'll see people treat others differently because of the color of their skin. Like, they'll all be black. It's just some will be lighter than others, and they'll actually treat darker skinned people differently or vice versa. Like, and it ends up being a schism in actually how these people operate in the world, and it's like, that's not how that should be. We're all black.
Yeah.
So, like, I just like to add into that perspective coming from Jamaica. In my country, I've definitely seen colorism as people of lighter skin complexion get more opportunities than people of darker skin complexion, and people who are darker normally bleach their skin to look more of people lighter because that's more perceived as beautiful in many cultures because of how Europeans have thwarted the mentalities of black people over the years throughout slavery, and have really bring that the closer they are to become white, the more they are to being better and good in society. This could even be perceived down into the doll studies, where the kids...
The tests
where the children were given the different dolls were good and bad. So, Bianca, you seem to know some of the doll study. What could you tell me of your reaction to this doll study and how you felt towards it?
I mean, it was just really hard to see, like, very young, innocent children opt to choose, you know, a white doll as opposed to a black doll, or even just associating positive attributes with white images. And it feels like just because the color of their skin is just so much of an impact on their own life, that they're only made to subject that same colorism onto something else and then internalize those experiences. And it's just so hard to see that at like a young age. And the idea of colorism is all around us, like literally the same thing that you talk about, it happens here. You know, I've seen Beyonce go from one shade to the next in a drastic amount of time, and it's just the media perpetuates a certain type of image. And even me having my own experiences, it's just there's this infatuation with light-skinned people and this object of, you know, if you're brown, you're down, you know, if you're light, you know, you're all right, you know, if you're yellow, you can mellow, but if you're black, you know, you gotta go back. And it's just like that's been generational, and it's just disgusting to see that, you know, that's just being instilled in such, you know, young children, and even, you know, it's still existing today when it literally was just, like you said, started in slavery hundreds of years ago.
But I mean, can I just like say, like, this whole light skin, dark skin trend, like, thing that's been going on, like, if you also realize, like, media has a lot of control as what's considered the black beauty standard, because right now, like, despite everything that you did just say, I feel like darker skinned women are more desired right now than lighter skinned women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially in the media, like, team dark skin, like, literally, I feel like on social media, you're gonna see, like, dark skinned women are the ones who are being praised. Obviously, the light skinned women are, but I feel like media is always gonna control, like, that shift. Cause, like,
yeah.
Even when you saw the cast of Grown-ish, for example, on, like, everyone was commenting on it, that where's the diversity? Like, there's no dark skinned people. And to me, that really didn't, like, it made sense, but it was, when you looked at the picture, it was a good variety of hues of, you know, black people in general. So I feel like that also comes into play, like, black people also choose to segregate themselves and, like, subdivide themselves into categories. Because I feel like if you see a black actor on TV, you should be happy to support instead of having to just, like, criticize because, you know, they're not as dark or not as light, you know?
See, I definitely agree with that, and I feel as though I support, you know, black people, period. And there is, you know, a certain commonality in seeing, you know, someone black in fame. I just think just the object of understanding what, you know, mainstream media, and by mainstream, I mean white America, because it's like, for real, we're not the people buying these people's, you know, CDs. We're not the ones purchasing $1,000 tickets to go see Beyonce's tour. So it's kind of just like the object of colorism is just, you know, it's just interesting just to see that perspective.
Yeah, I feel like colorism definitely is not something that you can accurately put into like a box in terms of how it feels, because racism is already an institution. So being set in a system that's already institutionalized, you would think that people would be trying to help each other out of the system, and instead like they're putting up more roadblocks with colorism. So like you have more people, it's so counterproductive.
So I'd just like to introduce for all you guys here that we have here on the panel, the concept of like black psychology and what the discipline was introduced for in terms of reading racism. So black psychology is an African lens view of psychological phenomena. So this goes towards the father of psychology who decided to go against mainstream psychology and decided that it was important for black people to have a separate space to create and develop and think and develop methods for helping themselves versus the white man telling the black person, hey, this is what we're treating you with, like ADHD misdiagnosis. So it was important for black people to create a space for themselves to do this. This became black psychology. So what do you guys feel, in other ways, black people should create spaces for themselves in terms of racism, to go against, counteract racism?
Well, I definitely think that this attributes itself to my African American literature class. And I think black people have definitely looked at other methods that maybe aren't as highlighted to contrast, you know, these aspects of racism. It's like when you look at, you know, slavery, you know, you're getting whipped every day, but yet, you know, these ideas of, you know, domestication, like you're cooking, you're cleaning, you're writing, you know, you're learning how to read. These were your aspects and these were your methods of survival. So it's like, in turn, I feel like these are the pockets that, you know, black people have used to really combat and, you know, express themselves, especially in this time where the object of racism is so heavy on everyone's heart. If you look at rap music, you know, people are talking about getting gunned down, listening to, you know, spoken word. It's like you see, you know, expression. And I think that expression and creativity needs to continue to feed itself into the black community, because otherwise, you know, the object of racism is always going to be around us, and it's only going to, you know, eat at us more than we eat at ourselves.
So, but black people are overall oppressed in our society.
Right.
So how do you see, as a woman, how are you coupled with sexism and racism in our society?
I mean, I think it's hard. Like, honestly, black women are at the bottom of the totem pole. We're like the most desired, but we're the least favored. And it's just like, at some point, you have to realize that there are many odds against you, and even more odds when you add in more factors like being LGBTQA, or, you know, coming from a difficult background, or being international. It's like there are so many different factors, but like being a woman especially runs itself hard against the male counterpart. But, you know, finding pockets of, you know, of your womanism, and, you know, making sure to objectify yourself, you know, as a woman, you know what I mean? And I feel like this idea of feminism, I don't really support that, because it's very white idealist, and it's very contrasting of men, when I feel like womanism is in support of women, and especially women of color. So it's so, like...
So this is where you see... So just to go back, you said feminism is more white inclusionism. It's more like a Eurocentric perspective.
Yeah.
So you'd say this is where we get something more Afrocentric.
Most
built
definitely.
For like Afro women.
Yeah, it was definitely founded for black women, and, you know, being so we understand the African diaspora, so many different women are entitled as black, but, you know, just the object of womanism and, you know, the movement has become so popularized, you know, there are more women like our Latino sisters and even, you know, Asian Americans that are contributing, but it is for women of color, but specifically for Black women, I believe, and that's how I conceptualize it.
So, yes, so I just want a male perspective. So, Michael from Massachusetts, would you just like to expound on that for us? In terms of how you feel in terms of racism coupled with sexism in society?
Racism coupled with sexism? I feel like racism is definitely its own. They're both bad.
So Raj from Trinidad, how do you feel about racism? And Raj from Trinidad, how do you feel about racism and sexism?
I feel like there are a lot of stereotypes that pertain to Black male. That are just very specific to Black men. For example, like, a lot of when people say, for example, oh, your children's father is Black, like, no one, he's never around, like, the expectations that the Black family that is going to be a single parent family, it's the expectations that the Black man either supposed to carry his children or never be there. There's going to be, there's a perception that you can't trust Black men. And I feel like that goes hand in hand with racism and sexism.
Yes. That's good. Yes, so I just like to further expound to like how Black men were treated back historically, how they were used as workers and slaves and tools super slaves for the white man, and beaten constantly, and most Black men were dehumanized in many ways, especially like from my perspective back home in Jamaica. Black men were beaten to the point they were castrated on many occasions, and their women were raped. So these psychological issues that were developed and mental issues developed due to a lineage that caused racism due to white oppressive forces. So I'd just like to conclude if a few remarks from what a few last few questions, and each people gonna be given a question just to answer each. So Raj from Trinidad, I'd like to ask my question: what do you determine as your Blackness?
What do I determine as my Blackness?
Yes.
So when I think of my Blackness, I feel like it goes hand in hand with my culture, my skin, and my experiences. So when I say my culture, I mean that my mom is mixed, but she's half Black, and my dad is half Black. If we're talking from a, you know, ethnic standpoint, I would consider myself Afro-Caribbean or Black, right? When it comes to my experiences, I feel like if I've lived a black upbringing, like while growing up in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, growing up in a household where both of my parents were half Black, I would say that a lot of their, you know, cultural values and practices and experiences were passed on to me. So, yeah, I would say like that would be my Blackness.
Yes. So, Michael from Massachusetts, how has your Blackness affected you when you were? How has your Blackness affected in terms of racism when you were in Spain? being a black man in Spain?
Okay. Well, when I was there, I kind of didn't have the experience that everyone expected me to. I did not personally experience racism. In fact, it was almost as if they idolized black skin, at least in the center of Spain. Like, it was different. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced. People would go out of their way to help me do things. People would talk to me on the street, like, actually genuinely have a conversation with me. And then they would also, like, just
embrace your blackness.
Yeah, they embraced it.
So, Bianca, how have you felt your blackness has been oppressed?
I feel like my blackness is being stolen by white snow bunnies. And I think, you know, that oppression also comes from not being able to exonify my own blackness. Like, the whole battle about, you know, Taylor Swift versus Nicki Minaj twerking. It's like Taylor Swift, you know, she gets a Grammy in her video, but Nicki Minaj can't get nominated, and she actually gets shamed for the voluptuous curves that she has as, you know, a black woman. So I think, you know, the constant strive that people have to be black, but nobody wants to actually endure the essence of being black, especially on top of that being a woman, that's the oppression that, you know, I endure.
So, just to conclude for our viewers, I just say, everyone, thank you for listening. And for a final statement, to take into consideration the different factors that affects one's racial identities, such as your experiences, your background, your culture, where you're from, your lineage, and everything. Have a good night, and high cast. Yeah. High five, guys. High five. High five, everybody. High five.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.